So we're in the stretch run of the PWHL season, and there's a lot going on as the playoffs get started. We're going to try to delve into as much as we can this week with a special guest. Welcome on into the PWHL Puck Drop Podcast.
It's time for the PWHL Puck Drop Podcast.
So where to start? Maybe we'll take a look at the standings first of all, and we've got an X beside PWHL Toronto. They have 38 points with three games remaining, so they are the first ever team to clinch a playoff spot in the first season of the PWHL. Congratulations to them, and they did that by virtue of a win over Montreal in that historic game at the Bell Centre, which we'll get to in just a second. And Montreal moves into a tie for second with Minnesota. They both have 35 points. Minnesota has dropped two games since the World Championship break. And Ottawa coming on strong. They're on a three-game win streak overall, and they had a great, great game against Minnesota. So they are sitting alone in that fourth place with four games remaining. Boston is just outside with 2 points fewer and only three games remaining. And then there's New York, who are actually in a scenario where they could be eliminated in their very next game. So, of course, we can start with that duel at the top on Saturday at the Bell Centre in Montreal, and a world attendance record for women's hockey with 21,105 people in attendance to see that. And that is the largest attendance ever recorded for a women's hockey game worldwide, of course, breaking the record of just over 19,000 at the Battle on Bay Street at Scotiabank Arena. Of course, one of the moments that everybody was really happy to see was the standing ovation for Marie-Philippe Poulin before the game. She had just come back from the World Championships, where she scored two goals in the gold medal winning game. And so there was an outpouring for her that was very, very touching to see and well-earned. Nice to see her get that in person and realize how much she means to hockey fans everywhere. So there it is, the world record. And over the weekend, they actually set a total attendance record with the three games on Saturday, a total attendance of 34,347. So the vibes and the positivity are just amazing to see. The Bell Centre event was great, and the game itself was great. Of course, it was a back-and-forth affair. Toronto scored first with Blair Turnbull getting on the board, and then that was answered at the end of the first period with a nice goal by Sarah Bugeaud. Early in the second period, Sarah Nurse scored, and then late in the second, Erin Ambrose, who's been on fire, she scored to tie it up, and then it went into overtime where Sarah Nurse got the winner and made sure that the Toronto team is the first to clinch a playoff spot. And she was also named the first star. Kristen Campbell is looking a lot more like herself than she had in the previous game against Boston, and was named a second star. And Renee Desbiens, the gold medal goalie herself, was named third star. You know, I wrote an article for the Hockey News on Desbiens just as a side note, and she's had a good year overall, but you know, are we wondering if Elaine Chooley might take that spot for Montreal in the playoffs? Desbiens has shown a little bit of leakiness, like that first goal, as I mentioned. And it seems like when she comes outside the crease to play the puck, it's a little bit of a dicey situation. But, you know, nobody's going to question her pedigree, of course. But that was an interesting game to see, you know, quality on quality goalies against each other and Campbell come out the winner. So for Montreal as well, we want to note their earlier game against Minnesota that they won. So they've won two coming out of the break. And this was a really big confidence builder. They got up to a 2-0 lead in the first period, but then Minnesota stormed back in the second and went up 3-2. And then Montreal scored two late goals in the third period, one from Laura Stacey and then one from Kristen O'Neill, which was her second of the game. And so they were able to get the three total points with that late goal, denying Minnesota even the one. And Kristen O'Neill had scored on the power play in the first period, along with Marie-Philippe Poulin, who continues to just be really strong and looks like she is totally back from that injury. So it's great to see Kristen O'Neal having that success coming out of the World Championship where she really, you know, was one of the stars for Team Canada for sure. Here's the power play goal that she scored. And then, of course, it was number 29, Marie-Philippe Poulin, coming out of the great, great gold medal game. And she looks to be back to her old self and, you know, was fighting an injury through the World Championships, as we're pretty aware, and looks like she is 100% back and looking like her old self. So Montreal could well, you know, end up in that second spot or even the first spot. And you might have Minnesota and Ottawa coming in after that. What kind of a choice would that be for those teams? The first round is really going to be exciting to see with that, you know, pick your opponent rule. So as for Boston, they're doing what they can to remain in the race for that playoff spot as well. They defeated Toronto 2-1 in their first game back after the break. And then they went into New York a couple days later and won that game 2-1. Both of those were a little bit tight, but Boston's doing exactly what they need to do. They're getting timely scoring. We had Lexia Gia with her first goal for Boston. That was great to see, and that ended up being the game winner against New York. So again, they only have the three games left, and the big game that we're looking at is Boston facing Ottawa, and that is going to have a large say in who actually gets into that fourth spot. For Boston, they would have two games remaining after that, one at Minnesota on Saturday, April 7th, and then Montreal visits them on the following Saturday. So that would be their only chance to make up points. And as for Ottawa, they would have three more games. They have Montreal visiting, then they go to New York on Tuesday, and then the final game of the PWHL season itself is Sunday, May 5th, Ottawa at Toronto. So a lot of, you know, possibilities and scenarios happening for clinching scenarios. Minnesota was, you know, in a spot where they could have clinched had they won, and they weren't able to do that. So they are going to be looking to do that this week along with Montreal. The other big game on Saturday, of course, was the Ottawa victory over Minnesota. And we saw Brianne Jenner with a hat trick. Mashmeyer got the shutout, and Ottawa is just starting to look like they are really heating up at a good time. They're still missing Katerina Mrazova, who has been injured and didn't play in the World Championships, so that's notable, but they seem to be faring okay without her so far. We did have the three stars of the week named, and number one is Erin Ambrose, who had four assists in that game against Minnesota. It was just a great effort and a goal against Toronto. Brianne Jenner with the hat trick versus Minnesota. They're on the receiving end of some of these star performances. And then Erin Frankel, again, Boston doing everything they can. There she is with a .959 save percentage in the two wins for Boston. So the top four and even five are really close together. And that brings us to this article that I wrote for the Hockey News. I hope you're able to check it out. Describing how the gold plan is going to come into effect here shortly, and probably for New York, who look like they might get eliminated on Wednesday when they play against Montreal. Here's the scenarios where basically New York has to win against Montreal. If they don't, they're automatically eliminated. And then that other crucial game with Boston and Ottawa will have an effect where if Ottawa wins in any fashion, New York is also eliminated. They need Boston to at least pick up a point or two and for they themselves to win in some kind of fashion. So it's a combination of points between New York and Boston and no points for Montreal or Ottawa in order for New York to avoid elimination. However, here we go with the gold plan. Once a team is eliminated, the points that they're able to accrue will count as draft order points, and those will be displayed on the website of the PWHL. So that's going to be interesting to see. The team that gets the most points after elimination would get the first overall draft pick. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, if you are going to be eliminated, I guess you might as well get eliminated. And then New York would have these three games, one against Toronto, Ottawa, and then Minnesota, to stock up those draft order points. On the other hand, if it is someone like Boston or Ottawa and they're still in the fight until towards the end, they wouldn't have as many. Of course, that, you know, depends on New York winning some of these games and getting those points. And also, I've been keeping a graphic up to date with the draft prospects and the order that I see them going. It's been changing quite a bit. There are some really, really interesting players that you might want to read up on to see what might meet your team's needs. It seems that Sarah Filliere, who played at Princeton and played for Team Canada, has been the consensus number one overall pick. And then some of the others are shifting, you know, Hannah Bilka, Kayla Barnes from Team USA. So on defense, there's going to be, you know, a little jostling as far as whether teams might want to look at Claire Thompson, Kayla Barnes, Daniela Peshova, or Maya Nealon-Pearson, who declared for the draft. Ronja Savolainen from Finland will also be in that mix. And I'm expecting that the defense are probably, again, going to go a little earlier than some of the forwards, although you have to look at Bilka and you have to look at Danielle Serdakny in those first couple rounds, and Nora Toulouse as well from Finland. So looking at these names brings up our next guest, and I had a conversation with agent Eleni Demestahas. So that conversation is coming up right here. We are joined by a very special guest, Eleni Demestahas, the founder of the Hecate Sports Group, player agent and wearer of many hats, also a lawyer in her other part of life, and someone that is going to talk with us about a lot of interesting issues from the side of things that the players are obviously interested in. Signing their contracts, playing in the league, getting to play in this brand new league when it kind of started rather quickly. So welcome on in, Eleni. We're so happy you're here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sure. So let's start off with a brief history of, I know that you started this sort of out of just an interest and a speculative idea that this might work and then got it off the ground. What was it like doing this all on your own?
I mean, I'm kind of a control freak, so it was nice. Like, if there's one thing that I've learned over the last year, it's that I really love, like, working for myself. I'm the kind of person where, like, if I work in a larger system and the system is inefficient, it's, like, very frustrating for me because I can always see how things might be improved. So I actually really like, for the most part, I actually really like just doing my own thing. There are definitely times where it gets a little overwhelming, but I also have like a great support system of people around me who are really smart and really good at all the stuff that I'm not good at. So, you know, I've had, friends of mine who are really good with stats, like Mike Murphy. I've paid him to help me with stats stuff here and there. You know, had friends that are designers that I pay them to design stuff. I ended up bringing on a former client of mine, Amy Buddy, who's been helping me a little bit as a player advisor because she played in Sweden and in Austria. So, you know, her insight is really helpful. But it's definitely, it's for the most part, it's been awesome. It's been a lot of fun and especially a lot of fun to kind of be able to control my own destiny, so to speak.
Right. Yeah, that sounds... It sounds like a lot, but good for you. And I know that one of the things when you were early on in forming this, I'm pretty sure you had a client or two already. And I know Amanda Boulier is one of your first clients. And the PHF was purchased by the PWHL. Kind of things happened rapidly. Can you tell us a little bit about that when you had some early clients and when that all took place?
Yeah, I think the ones that I had three with contracts that had already been signed. So Boo was one of them. Rachel McQuigg had re-signed with the Riveters, and Naomi Raji had signed with the Riveters. So I had those three with contracts that had already been signed. And then I had one, two, three, probably four or five of them that we were getting close. I mean there's no way to know if we were ever actually going to sign them, but it felt like we were getting close. And then weirdly it was like suddenly we couldn't get anything done. Like we could get the GM to talk to us, but the owners were not like signing off. Like the GM might say, okay, I'm ready to sign your player at this money, but the owners won't sign off on it. Like I can't get the owners to answer me or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it turned out there was a reason for that. But at the time it was like really weird. So those three girls, their contracts, like we just had to start from scratch basically. And the first conversation was like, if this league really happens and gets off the ground, like, do you want to do this? And that was a question that like some of them didn't even really know until training camp how they felt about it. Wow. And then even the people who did want to know, it was like, what is the process like? Conversation I had with Naomi was like, what is the level of risk? Because she had several offers from Sweden that she had turned down to play for the Rivs. But then in the context of like the new league, it was like, you know, if you're risk averse, like just go abroad kind mm-hmm. of. And after it gets through a year, we'll have a better idea of like how the system works and where you might fit into it and all of that. So it was definitely a crunch, like probably a solid month of like daily phone calls or emails trying to figure out what was going on.
Yeah, wow. I know that, you know, it all happened very fast and everybody that played a part anywhere from league management to on the player side had to move fast and make fast decisions. Amanda Bouillier is fairly well known, you know, and definitely a great player. And I know that she got traded to Montreal, where she now plays with another one of your clients. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Yeah. That's kind of neat. I like that.
Yeah, it's fun. They actually didn't know each other until now. So Amanda coached at Yale for a season. And I think that, I think Mariah was already at Princeton at the time. So Amanda probably had seen her play.
And it's Mariah Keppel, by the way. Mariah Keppel, who's also, I believe they're deep partners, aren't they, as well?
They are deep partners. Yeah, Mariah plays on the left side. She's number two. And Amanda plays on the right side. She's number 44. Mariah's about 5'9", and Amanda's about 5 feet tall. It's really cute. We had no idea that Boo was even in conversation to be traded because she was really, like, really well liked in Ottawa, and her getting traded had nothing to do with that. But I knew before the draft last fall, I knew that Montreal was interested in her because they asked me about her. And at the time when I asked her, she kind of was like, I don't know if I, you know, her family, like everybody is in Boston. So she was like, kind of iffy on like, I'm not sure, like it's a brand new league and I don't know what it's going to be like. And like, it makes me kind of nervous to think about moving away from my support system. So I kind of told them in September, I was like, I don't know if that's a great choice. Like, I can't guarantee you that she's going to be able to make it work. So they didn't draft her. And Ottawa drafted her pretty late, I think partially because of that. Mm-hmm. And then she went to training camp and loved it. And so happy for her that it worked out. But yeah, we had no idea she was even in consideration. I don't even think Ottawa had her in consideration. I think what happened was that I think that Ottawa really felt strongly that they needed goal scoring in their forward group that they weren't getting. And probably, if I had to guess, Amanda was the ask. Because they already had liked her in Montreal before and they felt like they needed to strengthen their decor.
Yeah.
So it was a good fit, I think, for both. Yeah. I think Laskova going down was a big, she was going to be the other right-handed defense and that sort of formed the core. So I think it ended up being a really good fit for both of them. She's super happy there. And as soon as she got, I was actually in New York City at the time when the trade deadline happened. So as soon as she got traded and Montreal found out about it, Mariah Keppel texted me and was like, hey, can you send Amanda my number so that if she needs anything, she can ask me. And this kid's like, she's 23. Like, that's just how like mature and like, nice. That's the kind of teammate she is. Just a great kid. And when Amanda first got there, she played on the top pair for a minute with Erin Ambrose. Mm-hmm. And it was Katie Tabin and Mariah on the second pair. And then they flipped them. And since then, Boo's been playing with Mariah, and it's so fun. It's like it's fun to watch them. They seem to really enjoy it and play well together. I think their styles are really complementary, so been super cool to see.
Yeah, that's a nice story and nice. I do think Keppel, she designs clothes and kind of looks like she has a fun personality. So, just seems like a really interesting character and always nice to have that injection of personality on teams.
For
Okay,
sure.
so I know we've caught you at a busy time of year because as the season comes to an end and contracts expire and we have the draft, and I know you have several players that will be in the draft and hopefully taken early and exciting there. But I just want to ask kind of what the process is like with all of this and with some of the unknowns. One of the questions that I had, and I don't know if we know anything about the expiration of these 1 year contracts, which is pretty much a good two-thirds of the league, I believe. And whether, players are kind of leaning towards staying, or if you foresee a lot of turnover, if other players might lose their spot because of the influx, like what are all those issues right now as far as how you view it?
I think it's so player and team specific. Like, if I had to guess, I would say most players on most teams would be happy to stay. It's a 7-round draft, and not all, I would guess that not all 7 draft picks for each team are going to make the team, but the teams have to be thinking about, like, where do we think we can improve based on who's available out of this draft pool? Where do we think we can improve? We haven't really been communicated. I don't think the GMs or coaches or anything have an answer to this either, but I think right now none of us really know, like, when it is that they're allowed to start re-signing people or extending people or whatever. And I don't know, we don't know exactly when the draft is going to be. Like, we know it'll be in June, but we don't have a date as far as I know. So it's hard to know, like, if teams are going to mostly try to re-sign their core before the draft, or if they're going to wait and see who they get at the draft and then make decisions. I have no idea. And I do think it's very team specific. There are teams that are already having conversations about, hey, we'd like to bring this girl back. This is what we think it would look like. We'd like to do it for a year, or we'd like to do it for 2 years, or this is where we see her fitting into our future plans, and does that sound good, and whatever. But there are also teams that are just not there yet. And I think it's just because this is the first, like, true off season. So I don't know that any of us really have, like, a good idea of what it's going to look like or how it's going to go. And it's, to be honest with you, like, it's been that way since this league was announced, like, kind of building the plane while we fly it. So at this point, it sounds insane, especially when you try to explain it to someone who doesn't follow the league at all. Like, if I try to explain to my lawyer colleagues, like, how this goes, they're like, how do you do anything with that level of uncertainty? And I don't know what the answer is. Like, we just keep doing it, and we'll figure it out. I kind of try to keep the mindset that, like, I will solve the problems when they come to me. And in the meantime, like, I'm not gonna make myself suffer trying to solve the problem before I have the, raw materials for it.
Well, good for you. I'm sure that helps players, that you have with you that, that you're like, I got this, whatever comes up, we'll deal with it because, like they need to concentrate on right now. It's a really important time of year, obviously, for them to stay healthy and to focus on the games. And, I'm sure that's in the back of their minds, but knowing that they have an agent who will kind of manage those details or give them a heads up when there is something to pay attention to, that's very helpful, I'm sure. But
That's the goal.
yeah, as a fan and someone covering the league, it makes it exciting to sort of speculate on what we might see, but without knowing, it is really hard. And I don't think a lot of turnover would be great for, fan bases to lose, six or seven players that they're just now getting to know and love. So you would think that the league has to keep that in mind as well.
I don't know if they I think I would love to believe that they're doing that calculus, but I think it really what it comes down to more is like you obviously don't want to lose every personality on the team that you know fans have been attached to. But you also can't keep someone on a roster if you think you can improve your roster by replacing them just because they are well liked. Which is like there's a balance to it, and some teams will probably be better at striking that balance than others. And there's so many layers to it, like even stuff like, hey, if this is someone that we don't expect is going to necessarily be a core part of the team for a long period of time, maybe we don't emphasize them that as much as we have been on social media. Like it's a level of inter-team communication that I think we're not quite there yet with. But I don't think, I mean, I think there are going to be teams that where there's not a lot of change. You've got to think the better teams in the league, there's going to be more girls that are able to stick because the team is good. And the teams that have struggled more, I would guess that there's probably more turnover in those places, which is like you'd see that in the NHL too. Hopefully, you know, they strike a good balance between making the league better and not just like replacing everybody because they can and the talent is there.
Right. And then knowing that the NCAA had to make those adjustments for COVID years, obviously it's not this summer, but it's next summer that there will be like a double cohort or a double kind of graduating class or and probably an even greater influx. Are you looking towards that at all? Or is that like, I can't even worry about that right now kind of thing?
I mean, it's more that my current client base is like, I don't currently have any clients that are enrolled in NCAA schools. And it's more a question of like, if you're somebody who, because a lot of my client base plays abroad. It's a question of like, when is the right time to make that transition or try to make the transition from playing in Sweden to playing here?
Right.
And in my head, for a lot of them, the answer is either now or the year after that. Like you should either try to come over now and make an impression this next year so that you can stick through that season, that off season, or keep playing in Sweden and wait until after that whole disaster. I mean, it's going to be so competitive. I think the thing about it that is really sort of makes it a bigger problem is that I don't see the league expanding until the year after that double cohort.
Yes.
I would think the league will probably expand right as those 3-year contracts come off the books, which makes sense, except in the context of that double cohort.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it definitely isn't something I'm super worried about right now, but it's like something that I'm aware of, and there is some level of having that conversation with younger players about like, if you are not going to go in the first 4 rounds, like maybe you try to sign for a European team and go to a training camp if you get drafted, but like with the goal of sort of staying stashed in Europe as a prospect for a minute instead of, you know, putting yourself at a disadvantage, you know, competing with like an even bigger group of people next year.
Yeah. Thank you for that insight. That's something definitely to keep tabs on. And you're right about the expansion. It makes sense, you know, business wise and logistically that they're not quite ready, but you know, the graduating classes are what they are. So it's going to be a bit of a cluster that summer. And yeah, some pretty big decisions. I do want to talk about the players that you have upcoming. Do you want to just hit the highlights and hopefully we'll be able to do a deeper dive? I know you were at the World Championships watching 3 or 4 of your players on Team Czechia and Finland. How many? Sorry.
3 of them were at that tournament. One of them is in Division 1A right now.
Right. Okay.
One of them played in the Division 1B and one of them played in the Division 2 world. So I was able to go to the top Division worlds and see, I have 2 players on the Czech team Klara Pezlarova and Noemi Neubauerova. She goes by Nemo, and then Nora Toulouse of Finland.
Yeah. Toronto bound Nora Toulouse. I'm just putting it out there. I love Nora Toulouse.
I mean, that would be fun for you for sure. I would not complain. All three of them played in Sweden last year, so I didn't get to see them play in person. I made it out to a game where I saw a pretty significant percentage of my Ottawa players. So I was trying to hit as many this year and knew that was probably my best opportunity to see these girls before the draft. And the last time that the Worlds was on U.S. soil, I was there. It was 2017. So trying to keep that going. Mm-hmm. I went out there. They left me tickets for the games, which was super helpful. And then after the game, I would wait and say hi to them. So I got to say hi to them and talk to them a little bit in person, which was really nice. We talk pretty regularly anyway, but obviously different to get to meet in person. And also just getting to see them play in person is huge. I think I obviously watch a lot of tape. I put together packages, like draft packages for them. There's sometimes, like with Klara and Nora, like people know a lot about them.
Mm-hmm.
So the work that I do is a little different for them than it might be for someone like Nemo, who I do a lot of work, like, you know, Ottawa, obviously Carla knows her really well, so I don't need to tell Ottawa too much about her, because Carla's gonna tell Mike everything that he needs to know about both of those girls. But for other teams, like, you know, I have already been on a call with a scout for another team talking about multiple of these girls, and being able to go see Nemo play live, yeah, I have a much better idea of, like, hey, this is what she's doing that you might not see on a stream because it's off the puck. Like, this is how she communicates with her teammates. This is what her positioning looks like. And this is why she's utilized the way that she is. She's also utilized totally differently on her national team than she was for her club team. So being able to highlight that versatility, I think, has been huge. And just getting to see some good hockey. You know, I got to see them play the USA and Canada, and then play each other for bronze, which was super fun because in theory I couldn't be disappointed by that game, right? And we certainly weren't. It was a really close, exciting game, and all three of them played really well and didn't get hurt, which is all I could have asked for.
I wanted to touch on Nemo, as you call her, Noemi Neubauerova. I think that she raised her draft stock quite a bit with this tournament. I think that type of player, a versatile kind of up and down the lineup player, is just valuable on any roster. And, you know, she made herself noticeable mixing it up a little bit, and that's never a bad thing. So, you know, just from, I'm not like biased or cheering for or against anyone, but I will tell you that I do think she raised her draft stock. So good on her.
Yeah, that seems I've had conversations about her with a couple different people that have sort of said the same thing you did. Yeah. I think that there are teams in the league that feel like they're a little bit soft, or like they kind of feel like they need a momentum player. Like, you know, if you've gone down in a game, it's nice to have someone with that kind of energy on the bench that's going to make you come out and, like, and she is so that player.
Yeah.
And she's just not, like, as we saw in the Canada game, not the kind of person that will back down from anything. I think something that I really have been stressing about her and about Naomi Raji too, who's a center with, like, a similar, Nemo's a winger. That's kind of the main big difference to me between them. They are both players who have top six upside. So if you have them in your middle bottom six and someone gets hurt, you can elevate them while that person is hurt for a couple games and not feel like you're getting a crazy downgrade, because they have the speed, they have the IQ, and they know how to play in that top six role and aren't going to be, like, you don't have to completely change your game plan, which I think is definitely something that teams are going to be looking for in the draft.
Yes, agreed. And the Czech players, I think most would agree were drafted a little bit later than they might have been. We did a redraft and they were all drafted much higher. So, you know, that awareness that, hey, they might, you know, they, when they play at the national team, they're not playing with as star heavy a group as Canadians and Americans. So when they stand out and play well, you know, it's even a further notch up the ladder.
Clara, that was the first Worlds that Clara played in a couple of years, because she had been injured. So during a league game, she tore both her ACL and her MCL and then had to come back from that.
Wow.
And so this was her first Worlds back in a minute, and she played every single minute of every regulation game plus a full overtime, which put her at 430 minutes.
Wow.
And set a record, which is awesome. Definitely something she knew and like was aware of during the tournament. There was definitely a time where they could have taken her out and they offered to, and she was like, I want the record. So she stayed in. I think the thing that stands out the most to me about her mentality is like, for someone to have had that level of an injury and still be playing with the level of fearlessness that she has, like, she's just so calm. The kinds of stuff that would and maybe should rattle most people just doesn't, maybe internally she's feeling it, but it makes the players in front of her play with such confidence, because, you know, even going into an overtime, you're like, Clara's not worried about it.
Yeah.
Like, she's got it. Let's go out and score, you know? And the other thing that I think is so interesting is that a lot of the goalies in the league are, and will continue to trend bigger and bigger. And that's like an overall trend we're seeing in hockey. And Clara is my height. I'm like 5'6". She's pretty small. But you can't tell when you watch her play because she plays so mm-hmm. big. She stays up really for a long time. And so she cuts the angles down really efficiently, and just, she's very aggressive. You will not see her flop around for the puck very often. And generally if she does, she's going to get to it. So I think she's a really interesting player stylistically, and definitely, I only expect one or two goalies to go in the draft, mm-hmm. and I would expect she'd be one of them for sure.
Yeah. If fans are keeping up with my social media, I'm trying to do a draft ranking, and it's so many factors are moving around, but she's always right there, you know, top 10, top 12. I think, I mean, I have a, you know, okay, I'll ask you, you don't have to say which teams you might have spoken to about her, but are there one or two that you're kind of thinking they might need like a 1A that would be a good fit for Clara?
Yeah, definitely. I think that there are two kind of obvious ones, and one or two more that people might be surprised to see them upgrade at 1B, 1A, who I think are dark horses for potentially drafting her.
Interesting. Wish I could get a scoop on that, but we'll we'll see. I mean, yeah, goalies are very interesting to watch, where they, you know, when a team decides to go for it. I want to just say thank you. And hopefully we can have you back on really soon. We're running out of time. Yeah. So
no worries.
Yeah, we want to have you back on and talk about some more of those draft eligible players and how your summer's going along.
Yeah, for sure. I'd be happy to come back.
Thank you so much. That was a great conversation. And thank you so much to Eleni for joining us. We're going to be talking to her again before the draft, and probably an interview with at least one or two of her players before the draft. So if you're curious about them and want to get the inside scoop, make sure you hit subscribe. And I just want to note that I am not, you know, monetizing and advertising on this podcast. I want this to be listener supported. And that means that if you find the link on your platform, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or YouTube, there are various ways to send us either a donation, a super thanks, or to sign up for a monthly donation of a dollar or two. That would really help us just keep the equipment and, you know, keep my computer memory up to snuff, and as well as just keeping myself caffeinated and, you know, just to really bring you from a fan's perspective with a little bit of an insider scoop and insight on what's going on in the PWHL. So please do that. I would really, really appreciate it. I don't want advertising to kind of take away from the podcast just yet. I want you to be able to enjoy it. So if you hit the super thanks on YouTube and make sure you're subscribed And on Spotify, I believe there's a support button that would really go a long way to keeping the quality and, you know, the regularity of the podcast here for you. So with that, we're going to wrap it up and we'll be back next week. We'll probably know at least one or two more of the playoff teams. Watch that game between Boston and Ottawa. It's going to be just a nail biter down to the wire for those teams. And we'll be back to wrap next week up and bring you some more PWHL news right here. So we'll see you then in the next one.
PWHL Puck Drop Podcast.